Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannon for Set for Success. Yep, I am your host, and we're going to continue our journey. And you know what journey that is? We're going to help you create a roadmap to change your business, your career, and life. And how are we going to do that? We're going to do that through chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes to help you create the success that you deserve. And you do deserve to be successful. Everybody deserves to be successful. Hey, it's Set for Success quote time. And if you listen to my show, you know I always love to start the show off with a quote. The secret of getting ahead is getting started. The secret of getting started is breaking your complex, overwhelming tasks into small, manageable tasks and then starting with on the first one. Mark Twain. Now, Mark Twain wrote that. Now, if you don't know who Mark Twain is, his real name is Samuel Clemens, and he was born in 1835 and died 1910. He's better known, of course, for his pen name, Mark Twain. He was an American writer, a humorist, entrepreneur, publisher, and lecturer. So he's actually quite a well-known guy. Lately, I've actually been enjoying a lot of Mark Twain quotes, and I've been sort of for fun just searching them on the internet and stuff, and I'm not too sure why. I guess it's just because of the simple language he uses to convey a point, and I've always liked simple ways of conveying a point. I've always thought that that was better. In this case, breaking down complex tasks and just getting started. When I first read this, I was thinking, well, that's very project management-ish or operational management 101. Break tasks down and follow a process. Go figure. I wonder how many people actually do that. But are you following the best process? And are people being efficient and effective in what they do? Because you could break a bunch of tasks down, but you could end up breaking down in such a way that you're following a bad process. So you're going to get bad results. A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to speak on the tasks of waste. And not the kind of waste or the kind of waste in organizations and in businesses and homes. Not like garbage or anything along those lines, but the waste of time, the waste of waiting, the waste of processes, and so on. It's interesting to see how much waste actually exists in our very businesses, our very careers, or our lives, or our home life even for that matter. Now, I know a lot of organizations are seeking to be lean, to make critical improvements so they don't waste so much. I've been thinking about that a little bit. And what's wrong with reducing waste? Maybe if you reduce waste, you start to use your time a little bit better and you just start focusing on getting things done through being more efficient with a process that everyone's quality of life would be better, would actually increase. And that's just a thought. I'm as guilty as the next person on wasting, but I do my best not to, especially when it comes to my time, as it's finite. My dad used to say at one point in his life, he started saying, I have more time behind me than in front of me. So why would I waste it? We all have a finite amount of time. And I've always loved that expression. It's interesting. As a younger man, I never quite understood it. But now, you know what, I'm in that zone where when I count the days, the years, the months, whatever we want to count, I can pretty much say that I have more time behind me than in front of me, and maybe you are in the same boat. So with that, I used the quote from Mark Twain, and we want to get started somewhere, I guess. So I'm going to introduce our guest. Now, I've decided to chat with a business associate of mine that I've had on the past, right, about being overwhelmed and getting into dealing with small tasks that count. And so my guest today is Michael Beer. And Michael is a lean black belt, helping organizations increase profit, increase customer satisfaction, and streamline processes. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Richard. It's great to be back.
Michael, you know, it's always good to sort of start off with a situation where we get the guests to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a full-time professional speaker and management consultant. I've been doing it for 20 years now. I am a certified lean black belt. My specialty is healthcare. However, my training will transcend to any organization. And I totally agree with what you said about waste. And lean really is all about eliminating waste.
Yeah, no, it is. It is indeed. It is indeed. Why don't we just start there? I know that I've had you on the show before and we've talked about lean. And you hear so many organizations, whether it's a manufacturing organization, you have a background in a healthcare organization, or it could actually even be an office administration area that's looking to become more lean. So why don't we actually start with that concept and just answer the question, what is lean?
What is lean? Lean is a process where we look at workflow and we determine the best flow that we could possibly have so that we're eliminating waste, we're eliminating duplicate tasks, we're eliminating safety issues and those kinds of things to streamline our operation, to give us back the most valuable thing is time.
Yeah, and time is finite. Time never changes. The clock always ticks ahead. I love all those old expressions, yeah. Right?
No, you're absolutely right. And in healthcare, if we can find time, that means we're taking time away from wasting time, and we can have time now, valuable time, that we can spend with our patients to help them. And that's the key in the healthcare sphere.
Yeah.
And of course, money as well. When we streamline, we look at waste. It's amazing how much money you can actually find, real dollars that you can find that are wasted just because of inefficient and ineffective processes.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about processes, and I sort of said this, I guess, my monologue about following good processes and bad processes. You can have an effective bad process as much as you can have an ineffective good process.
You're absolutely right.
And I know people look at that and go, well, isn't that make it a bad process? Well, no, you still get the job done, but in the end, it could have been done a different way and a lot better.
Exactly, saving both time and money.
Yeah, which is something that most organizations are seeking actually to save. Now, you mentioned the healthcare industry. Now, most of the healthcare industry work that you do, is that Canadian-wide or U.S.-wide?
Most of the work I do is in the U.S.
Yeah, and why would it be more focused on the U.S. at this point in time?
Well, a lot of it, quite frankly, has to do with marketing.
Yeah, okay.
It's just easier to market into the U.S. Than it is into the Canadian market. So you go where the business is. And I think the Americans, by and large, are perhaps more receptive to the concept of change and making the changes that they need, because of course with the idea there that if they can save money, they can expand their own business, et cetera, et cetera.
So sure,
they have
sure.
a different motivation, perhaps.
They have a different motivation. Aren't most hospitals though, and you correct me on this, it's just my understanding, more privately owned as opposed to Canada having more of a public or quasi-public environment?
Most hospitals are privately owned, so to speak. There are a lot of hospitals in the States that are owned by counties and small cities, so they're definitely a very important part of the community. The community doesn't necessarily support them financially.
Yeah.
They might get some tax breaks, those kinds of things.
Sure.
But they are very important and critical assets to a community. There are a lot of hospitals in the States that are owned by the faith-based systems. And there's a misconception that everything is for profit. There are only about 40% of U.S. hospitals are actually private, for-profit hospitals. The rest of them are owned by some kind of a faith-based facility or publicly owned as part of a county or a small city.
That's actually quite an interesting fact, because if you had mentioned, if we were talking on the sidelines, I would have thought that we're all 100% private and for-profit in their particular environment. That's an interesting fact to just sort of learn on. I know that you have lots that you can actually offer in terms of creating lean organizations, or just really not just in the healthcare but into other private sector businesses too. So I think what we'll do is we'll take a short break, and when we come back, I think what we should do is we should talk a little bit about making your organization lean. This is Richard Lanfer, set for success. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Michael Beer today, and we were talking a bit just before the break about the whole concept of lean. And I know this is a big one, and I know a lot of people, you know, when they hear that word for the first time, they don't really know what it actually means, especially from a business perspective. And I personally see this, and I think Michael probably would agree, you let me know, but when we're speaking or we're training and we're working with an audience or a client, we first mention lean, they may not actually be aware of what it is.
You're absolutely right. The first question I get asked is, what does it stand for?
Yeah, what's the acronym?
There is no acronym.
Yeah.
It's just making, you know, slimming the organization up. However, I'm an acronym kind of a guy, so I developed an acronym for
it. Oh, what is it?
Leveraging Engagement and Empowerment Now.
Oh, Leveraging Engagement Empowerment Now. Right on. And so what does that mean for you, or from, you know, when using that lean and that acronym as an acronym?
What it means is that in order to really become a lean organization, we have to get everyone in the organization involved. We have to empower our staff because the bottom line is, in any business, who knows 100% of the problems? Frontline. Who knows 100% of the solutions? Frontline. So we have to empower our staff to work on those issues and solve those problems, and we have to hold them accountable to do that, and we need to do it now.
Okay, so that's the sense of urgency.
It's the sense of urgency to get it done and to make sure it keeps happening.
Okay, that's actually a pretty good definition of this. During the break, you and I were chatting a little bit about different industries, and I know your expertise is in the healthcare industry, but how does lean or the work that you've been doing, how does that apply to, say, business in general, like the application to other businesses?
The application is transparent in terms of the process. Organizations need to understand, you know, what they have to do and where to start. And I think that sometimes is the biggest problem. I've gone into organizations where they've sent people for some very high level training. They come back with very skilled people, and now they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And they're being totally underutilized with a tremendous amount of money having spent on the education. So they bring me in to actually give the whole process and program structure. And that's what I bring.
So then your focus is more on the application of lean principles as opposed to just educating people on what lean principles are. Not saying you don't do both, but...
We do both, but we really are... When I come in, it's install it and get it running. Okay. Get it up and make sure that it's running. And then when I'm done, it's self-sustaining. You don't need me anymore.
Okay. When you look at a type of program with organizations you've worked with, how long does it take to put a lean type program in place?
Realistically, it takes about a year.
Okay.
It's an evolving process, you know, and the process starts with, we really have to educate people what lean is all about and what's the impact on the organization. Because the first thing that happens, people think, my God, lean, that means, you know, who's not going to be here for the Christmas party?
Who's not going to have a job.
Exactly. The two principles of lean is nothing is done without listening to the voice of the customer and into the response to that voice. And number two is everything has to be done with respect. Laying people off, bringing lean in to lay people off is not respect.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's respect for employees, it's respect for managers, it's respect for customers, etc. So first thing is we do the education. Then the second thing is we bring in a concept called lean daily management.
Okay.
And that takes about 3 or 4 days to get going in every organization. And basically we set up a huddle board or a Gemba board, we call them, in the workplace. We look at what are key performance indicators that you're tracking every day, what needs to get done. So for instance, in a physician's office, one of the key things is, have we done all the callbacks for patients to remind them of appointments? Have they been done? Because if they're not done, people forget. There's slots that are open. That's wasting everybody's time.
Yep.
So that's a great example of what a key performance indicator is. And then, is it being done every day? If something happens, if something falls off the board, are we tracking that? And are we putting in a countermeasure to make sure that it doesn't happen again? So we get people huddling every day around the huddle board to find out what's gone on, what's going on, what are we fixing and what are we doing? And once we've got that going in an organization, then we get into some of the really heavy analytical tools. But we want to get that easy stuff going first, where we're in those daily huddles. And it's interesting because managers aren't the ones that conduct the huddles. Frontline staff conduct the huddles.
Okay, so you train them how to do it.
Exactly, because if I'm expected to explain this once a week, and maybe the CEO is standing in the room because the CEO needs to round regularly, I better know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden I have to internalize this, and that's where I get that
part of the culture.
That part of the culture, and that's one of the keys. We've got to get everybody involved, and when that happens, it's amazing what can happen.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say that because I just got to share this in the technology industry or in world infrastructure and support. I ran a team years ago. This is some years ago, 15 years ago or more, and I didn't run the meetings. I had my staff run the meetings, operational staff, and every week when we'd have our weekly meeting, a different staff member would actually manage the meeting, right, and handle it and everything along those lines, and I would just make my rounds. Similarly, to this. I didn't realize I was put this principle in place, by the way. You know the interesting thing that happened? I got to share this, is that when we started looking at performance reviews and across the whole organization nationally, and when people started getting picked for projects, other teams in other places geographically across the country started to want to work with my staff members because they knew what they were doing. It was an amazing thing to watch. And that was not even planned. That was just sort of happened.
Well, exactly. But that's leveraging the engagement.
Leveraging the engagement.
And then the accountability piece comes in when they have to do this. And what happens is it's a steamroller effect.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the effect too on staff when they realize that, wow, like here's a senior manager who's listening to me and asking me questions about what's going on here.
Yeah.
This is cool. So it just changes organizations fundamentally.
Overall. With the size of organizations you're talking about, are they like big organizations? Like, are we talking about huge, massive organizations, or are we just talking about sort of mid-range?
We're talking from small to mid-range.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, the last organization that I did this with, I think they had 120 staff.
So that's not huge.
And at all.
And in our climate in Canada, I mean, that can be considered a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But still, small business in Canada is considered either 500 or 250 people or less. One of the things I'm interested in, and we're going to take a break shortly, but is when change happens in your organization, how do you react to it? Want to talk about that?
Well,
in a bit.
I'll gladly talk about change. Okay. Are you going to go to break?
You got to go to break
first. All right,
first.
We'll talk about it after break.
We come back. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Michael Beer today. Michael is one of my favorite lean people. So that's why periodically I have him on the show. And just before the break, I sort of threw Michael a winger. I didn't think he expected, but I said, well, why don't we come back and just talk about change in the organization and making it work? Because from what I can gather, you know, lean is really about change.
It's planned change.
It's planned change. So planned why don't change. We just sort of rip on that a little bit? Give us your thinking there.
Well, I'll give you my thinking on change. I'm a very radical thinker. I do not believe that people are resistant to change.
Okay, fair enough.
And I've had a lot of debates with folks about this because, people don't like change. People don't want to change. They don't want to do things. It's not that they're reluctant it's about change. People are reluctant to be changed and resistant to be changed unless they understand what the change is, how it affects them, and how they can be part of it.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty important point because it's not about doing something to me, which I will resist that.
Exactly.
It's about getting me involved in the process.
Working with me,
thank you.
Exactly. So anytime we do lean, we do a lot of work with the organization first about culture change, the advantages, and try to answer that question because they all listen to the same radio station.
Sure.
WIIFM.
Yeah,
what's in it for me?
Yeah.
So that's why you're listening to CJOB today.
Yeah.
Thought I better throw that in.
Sure. And Richard's Set for Success podcast.
And Richard's Set for Success.
Podcast. Yeah. There you go. Thank you, Michael. But anyway, go ahead.
So it's really important with any kind of a process like lean is you've got to prepare the organization first. And then when people realize what's going on and how they can be involved, the rest becomes much, much easier and simpler. And it's much, much easier to integrate it and to change the culture and to change the way they do business so that they really become lean and become far more effective. And you get everybody involved.
Yeah, that's a pretty big challenge, you know, don't you think? Like changing an organization's culture. You mentioned about earlier on that, you know, most lean programs maybe take 12 months to do. And you're talking more of what I would refer to Canada-wise as a small to mid-range type company,
yeah.
Right? But doesn't it take a while to actually get people to see the value of the change that you're trying to work on?
That's why it takes a year. It's and you start with that. You don't start to go in and make changes and say, this is what we're doing. You have to start with culture change. Why are we changing the culture? What are the benefits? What's it going to look like after? Can you get excited about this? Here's what we need you to help us with. And if you do the groundwork, the rest is easy. If you don't do the groundwork, that's when organizations fail. And I've seen that time and time again where they just want to get in and get the job done. That doesn't work. You have to prepare an organization. I remember I was sitting on a beach in Jamaica several years ago, and there was a couple sitting next to us. And so she said, I asked her what she did. Well, I'm a nurse in Regina, I think, or Saskatoon. She said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a lean expert. Well, up one side of me, down the other. Her husband's just shaking his head. He said, I keep telling her, don't get so excited about this.
Yeah,
but it was a classic example with the kind of complaints that she had where the organization wasn't prepared properly, in my mind anyway, for the changes that were coming. And there was this huge resistance to being changed because they didn't understand what it was all about. And it didn't go well in Saskatchewan.
No, from what
I understood.
And you know, when we talk about a Canadian context, we probably don't need to pick on Saskatchewan. We could probably, you know, in several provinces across this wonderful country, there's a lot of complaints about lean within the healthcare industry itself.
Yeah, because people don't understand it and why we're doing it and what their roles are. And that's the key.
Do you think that's more fear-based? I'm just wondering, or what do you think the issue is overall?
Well, false evidence appearing real. That's
false evidence appearing real, yeah.
I think the issue is we just haven't, you know, a lot of times we look at saying, okay, you know, there's a tremendous amount of resources that we have to put into this. Can we maybe lean up the process? And they look at, you know, do we really need this? Why don't we just get in and do it? And they're just cutting at the wrong place.
Yeah.
And you have to prepare the organization for change if you already want to have the change to be effective and everyone to embrace it.
Yeah, and I think that's actually interesting you would say that, because when I look at it, there's a lot of roles and responsibilities or career opportunities right now in transformation management or change management. And I'm seeing sort of a growth in that profession. Where people are certified and qualified to help organizations transform into the next new environment or business environment of what they need to be. And I suspect, based on what you're saying, that's more about preparation for change as opposed to just the change itself.
Exactly. That's exactly right. It's good. We got to prepare people for the change. And once they're prepared, then we can slowly start to make the change happen together with them.
With them, yeah.
With them. That's the key. Because the bottom line is, it doesn't matter how good managers are, if you can't get your staff to help you, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Let's take a little switch here, okay?
Sure.
We're going to switch topics a little bit here. I know you're a professional speaker.
I am.
I know that it's something in your life that you love doing. Is that fair enough to say?
That's very fair to say.
Fair to say. And, but you've been involved in several different programs or organizations over the years to be involved. And I know that this is sort of a real flip right in the middle of a show from one topic to another, but I want to talk to you a little bit about the speaking. I'm going to be very careful in the industry. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about an organization that if somebody wants to learn how to speak, where they actually might go to, and it's Toastmasters. But you've developed a very unique Toastmasters organization, haven't you?
We have. We sat down, there was a few of us who are professional speakers and members of Toastmasters as well. And we sat down and we said, Toastmasters has a professional designation, and there are only 75 have ever been given out. And we said, how can we put an organization together that will help professional speakers develop, and an organization that helps people develop to become professional speakers? So based on that, 2 years ago, we formed a Toastmasters club called Keystone Speakers, and we are focused on developing the skills that you need to become a professional speaker. So it's not just counting ums and ahs. It's not just doing speeches, but it's about marketing. It's about structuring your work, structuring your keynotes, how to do the business.
Yes.
So we're very excited about that, and we're growing slowly, but that is the place that's the only place now to come for any kind of training to become a professional speaker.
Yeah. And I guess that's what sort of fascinated me, because I live in the same world as you, right?
Well, that's how we met.
The real world.
That's how we met.
Yeah, how we met, right? But 30 years in the consulting industry, having done training, facilitation, speaking, like coaching. I mean, you end up doing it all over 30 years, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's like, you know, nothing new. But you can always hone your skills. And when you and I started talking a bit about what you're doing with Toastmasters, I've always thought, okay, well, Toastmasters is a place to go to learn how to speak, and hopefully eliminating the ums and ahs, and hopefully,
all that stuff.
Hopefully I've been doing okay on that. There's one. but yeah, I just thought you're just sort of taking that dynamic to a whole new level, sort of what that is what you're trying to seek to do with that.
Well, exactly. And, you know, we've done some really innovative things, I guess. This year, every year we publish an anthology, a business anthology.
And what do you mean by an anthology?
All of our members provide, we come up with a theme, and then everyone provides a chapter.
Yeah,
and we publish a book. So we're working on book three. It's going to be launched in May.
Yeah,
we do professional development days where we bring in professionals to help us develop the skills that we need. We look at a skill assessment. What do we need? We bring people in. We do writer's retreats to help people learn how to write and write their chapter. So we do all kinds of innovative things that you wouldn't normally find in what people traditionally think of as a Toastmasters club.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's why I wanted to give you some unique opportunity just to chat with it a bit on the show, because with a theme show of Set for Success, I think this is one of those organizations yourself and your associates, I'm going to call them associates as opposed to members, have created an area that can help people become set for success. And whether it's in their speaking or in their speaking business, not only that, but really becomes a platform for change for people in another way, since we were talking about change. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about change a little bit more and things that really impact your business. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Michael Baird today, and Michael and I were talking a bit about lean. We're talking about change. We're talking about Keystone Speakers, which is a fascinating club, which in essence helps people create change. You know, so a couple of different layers of things. But one of the interesting things during the break, Michael and I started talking a bit about change from the perspective of what happens when something happens in your life to make you rethink your life. And you and I, Michael, are men of certain
age.
I was going to say, I was going to use a different word, but vintage. I was going to use the word vintage.
I prefer age.
I like the word vintage because then I think of myself like a car or a motorcycle or something, or a well-kept guitar. You know, there are things that happen in our lives, just like everybody, that changes things in your life. And I know from a business perspective, you had created a lean material and you're working with a partner, and then some things actually happened out of that. So let's talk a little bit about your experience in business when a partnership adjusts due to a change. What tell us the story.
Well, I guess the story goes back, and we'll go back to the beginning because the listeners haven't heard the whole story.
But No.
Basically,
yes.
I have a good friend of mine, and we had worked together on some projects. And we sat down one day and we realized that this was a partnership made in heaven. I had a process that would work really well with his clients. He had a client that badly needed the process. And we said, wow, let's develop something. Let's put a business together, the two of us, and get this thing really dynamic. And we got very excited. We spent about a week together in Florida at his home, developing this whole concept and marketing plan and everything else. We put all the materials together. We got everything going. He was starting to work on the marketing plan, and he passed away.
I know. Tragic. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And I got the call, and I don't know what to say or how to react. You know,
well, it was a shock.
It was a horrible shock. And the whole project that we were working on, unfortunately, the marketing plan wasn't, and all everything we needed to move wasn't on paper. So the project basically passed away with him. It was very tragic. So, you know, being a man of a certain age rather than vintage, although I respect your, you know, your own adjective. I spent a lot of time last year at the lake, looking at the lake and thinking, you know,
Manitoba thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. You know, what do I want to do out of life? Where do I want to go now? Do I want at the point that I am in my life, do I really want to try to do this and develop this business on my own and grow it? Or is it time to say, you know what, you've got a really good client base that you're serving, your business is good, you're still making a difference, you're enjoying what you're doing, which is the most important thing of all. What do you want to do? And I decided that at that point in time is what I wanted to do was to manage my client base and to serve them well, but to go on the new business stream, it really wasn't it. The last book that we needed to put everything together is coming out later this year. So okay. we're finishing that, in honor of Greg.
What's the name of the book?
The book is Lean Daily Management.
Lean Daily Management. Makes a lot of sense. Very applied.
Yeah. Very applied. And it's an instruction manual is what it is. Yeah. It's not the kind of a book that you would read on an airplane.
It's a workbook.
It's a workbook. It's follow the steps and that's all you have to do. And if you have a problem, call me. My number's in the book. but we really, you know, when Greg passed away, it really got me thinking, like, where am I going in life? Well, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
And, you know, we had this whole plan that just
dissipated. Well, it just changed. It dissipated.
It just dissipated. And so it was it was quite revealing to me, I guess, and introspective of what do I need to do and where do I want to go in life.
And I thank you for sharing that, because one of the things I try to do on Set for Success is not just talk business and that, but it's to talk life issues too. Because the reality of it is your business, your career, your life and everything, you know, it's all connected, right? It's not just one single thing. And you and I have had this dialogue many times. I'm a bit younger than you, a younger vintage, but still a nice automobile, I like to think. And 3 years ago, I had an event in my life, personally, a quadruple bypass. I share that with people. I'm very open about it. But it changes everything. Yep. Like, it changes what was important to you is no longer important to you. But then you got to sort of figure out what's important to you again. And that's a journey in itself.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's a journey that we all at one point in our lives have to take.
And so where are you with your journey right now? What are you figuring?
Well, I'm still having fun. I love doing what I'm doing. I love, I feel I'm making a difference in people's lives, and I'm making a difference in my clients' lives and in their customers' lives. That's their patients' lives. That's the important thing. And I've decided while I'm having fun, I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing. And as soon as it doesn't become fun or it becomes work, then maybe that's the time to say, you know what, I'm retired.
Retired. Or what's next?
Or what's next.
Yeah.
But until that happens, I've decided I just want to keep going. I might slow down a little bit. Maybe, you know, my schedule last year was absolutely crazy.
Same here.
It was just like... So maybe slow down a little bit, but I don't want to stop, because I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and I like to think that I'm making a difference.
Yeah. I the reason why I get you to share this story, Michael, is that, you know, for our listeners out there who have things that they've been working on, and guaranteed there's people listening to us right now that have had plans, something's happened to a partner, something's adjusted in their lives. There is life after your plans, and it's just a matter of maybe just figuring out those next things you want to focus in on.
Exactly. You have to deal with the incident of what happens.
Yes.
Right? And in your case, your health. In my case, you know, the passing away of my friend, you got to deal with the whole emotion thing. You got to get all that. You've got to deal with that. And once you've dealt with that, then you're in a position to sit down and say, okay, now what's next?
Yeah.
Where can I go? What do I want to do now? Realize, and because of the impact of what's happened on you.
Yeah, and the changes that may be required.
Exactly.
Let's roll this up a little bit, okay? Because that's a very personal one. You must work with organizations, whether it's healthcare or other, where similar things happen, where you're working with clients and then something big has happened within the organization, and the organization, the people within the organization need to rethink what's next. Is that a scenario that you often see in your lean and change consulting service?
Not often, but it has happened.
Yeah.
The one that, again, that comes to mind was a client that I'm working on, and I got to know the CEO very well, and I considered him a friend. I remember him sending me a post. He had lost his wife to cancer about four or five years before I met him, and I knew he was seeing a lady, and I get an email from him one day and saying, we're married, and a nice picture. We were in Key West, and they got married. When I was down the next time, I congratulated him. I said, wow, this is like so cool. You know, why you know, I'm a little surprised. And he said, at our age, because he was of my age, he said, Michael, he said, we can't afford to wait.
Yeah.
And so I was really happy. I met his wife. She's a lovely person. 6 weeks later, he was killed in a motorcycle accident.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very sad.
And he was beloved in the organization.
Yeah.
And I remember I was scheduled for a trip down, and I phoned the acting CEO, and I said, you know, do you really want me? I said, because you guys have got all this stuff to deal with. And he said, Michael, you're normal. We need you.
Normality is important. Yeah.
He says, we need you to help us get through this, because you're normal. They're expecting you. So I went down, and we did our thing. And the organization there, because of who he was and what he put into place, continues to thrive today.
Yeah. And that's
and to grow.
Nice round circle. What a show we've been having, Michael. I always love having you on as a guest, because you're always very well spoken and articulate. Uh-huh. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you and talk a bit more about the topic we've been covering, how would they go about doing that?
They could send me an email. It's michael@theleanconsultinggroup.com. They could give me a phone call. 204-237-9257 is my phone number. if they could find the Lean Consulting Group on the web.
And there's some options.
Yeah,
there's
and some. Keystone Speakers.
Keystone Speakers, that's fine.
I got to put the plug in.
Yeah, well, you just might have a new member sitting here.
Well, hey, and we'd be delighted to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. You know what, Michael, thank you for joining me today. It's just awesome. I really appreciate it. You always are very insightful. I want to thank the listeners for tuning in, and you know the deal. If you have a thought, an idea, or a question regarding the show, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. I always appreciate those emails, but I do have something I need you to remember: to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.